Welcome to Power to the People. Hello and welcome to Power to the People. I'm your host, Erica Smith. As we move out of February celebration of Black History Month, we are moving into the month of March, which is dedicated to women's history, with March 8th being internationally recognized as Women's Day. The perfect person to help us segue from the celebrations of Black History Month and into Women's History Month is the one and only Dr. Mae Jemison. Dr. Mae Jemison has accomplished so many things on Earth as well as in space, and not very many people can say that. Her curiosity led her at an early age to a love of science, and with the support of her parents, Dorothy Green Jemison, an elementary school teacher, and her father, Charlie Jemison, a roofer and carpenter, they helped cultivate Mae Jemison's confidence. On September 20th, 2016, 24 years after her landing from her mission on NASA's Endeavour, September 20th, 1992, she speaks to both students and teachers at the University of Virginia's School of Engineering and Applied Science, where they were holding their Excellence Through Diversity Distinguished Learning Series. Here's an excerpt from her talk.
I want to start off by just, and I don't know how we do the pictures, but that's like one of my favorite pictures, right? We're doing yoga underneath the Milky Way, right? So it's that real blend that we want to do. But let me just do this the other way. People always talk about what you should be doing. And I always used to say, daring makes a difference. But I want to do something else. I want to say, don't dare. Don't doubt, dare. Just try it, right? So many times we hold ourselves back. And so I want to share with you again why I'm where I am now. It's because a West African proverb says, no one shows a child the sky. No one shows a child the sky. We all look up at the world with just great wonder and awe when we're children. And sometime along the way, some of us lose it, right? And then people call it growing up. But it's that wonderment, that awe of not just the stars, but of life and the universe itself that makes all the difference to us. So when I was growing up, I'll tell you, I grew up in the 1960s and was during a time where there seemed like the world had this unlimited potential, right? There were all kinds of things that were happening in the world. Every time you looked at it, there were new speed records being broken, right? New particles that were being found. The speed records could have been humans running, or it could have been, you know, supersonic transport. But all around me was this world that was filled with these incredible ideas. And I wanted to be a part of it. And I always assumed I would be a part of it. Now, as a little girl, I played with Barbie dolls. I had chemistry sets. You probably could tell I was an original series Star Trek fan, right? And I, 50th anniversary. And I also loved science. You know, I pondered the concepts of the Big Bang. I wanted to be involved with so many things. And at the same time, I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and I remember the riots in 1968 following Martin Luther King's assassination and the Democratic National Convention that had been held in Chicago. I remember my father who had gone to work that day, and I was really afraid for him. But all along, there was this whole idea about space, which I was so excited about. And I wanted to be a dancer like Judith Jameson, right? Lola Falana, Alvin Ailey. I loved Jerome Robbins. All of these things were very much a part of my world. And, you know, like all kids, you do space and dinosaurs, right? You can't do one without the other. So, you know, but it really was about this whole idea of being able to be a part of this world and making things happen. And that's where I was. And those are the things that actually lend the work to what I do nowadays. I ended up making it into space. I'm showing you these pictures. These are my proof of pictures, right? So, and when I went into space, astronauts are allowed to carry souvenirs up with them. When I went into space, I carried up a Bundu statue, right, of Women's Society in West Africa. I also carried up a poster of Judith Jameson performing the dance Cry for All Black Women Everywhere. And I carried up a certificate for Chicago public school students to promise to do well in math and science. I figured, well, I didn't need to carry up another Stanford banner. There had probably been too many of those. But I wanted to have all the people involved because it's the same creativity. It comes from the same source that Bundu statue, the shuttle comes from, that the dance comes from. Because it comes from our desire to understand and influence the universe as humans, right? So when you look at the sciences, it's the universe as it can be experienced by everyone. And I think of the arts are our personal experience, and that's how we influence others, right? We take a personal experience and externalize it, and with science, we take universal experiences and help to move things along. But all along with this whole idea, you know, some people might say, where did I imagine that I could go into space when Scott Carpenter, John Young, John Glenn, Yuri Gagarin didn't look anything like me or seem to share anything in common with me? I could, because I was raised by parents who helped me to maintain my self-confidence. It's the same confidence that every child is born with. And I had to learn, as you heard, never to limit myself because of others' limiting imaginations. And these days, I've had to translate that into never to limit anyone else's because of my limited imagination. So I want to talk just a little bit about universities and schools and the things that happen. A Yoruba proverb says, not even the sharpest blade can cut its own handle. So it didn't matter how bright I was as a kid. Right, I wouldn't have gotten there without the parents, the teachers, the folks who were around me to help me get there. And that's one of the things that I think we all have to remember. You know, nobody actually gets through this world without help. You can have the best potential, but we have to figure out how to make it happen. And that's part of the responsibility of being in a university, right? That's part of the responsibility of educators. It's about preparing yourself for the world ahead. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about universities, and I'm going to talk to students now, is that sometimes you like think that it's like the worst thing in the world, right? It's tough. But you need to be stressed. You need to be challenged, right? Because muscles don't grow without stress, right? You need to be challenged. Those are some of the things that happen. What you're doing here is preparing you for the social, cultural, economic skill sets, the ability to think and investigate ideas. Stress is important. You don't want to stagnate and grow. But I have, and you know, that's for the professors too. Stress is good for you all as well, right? It's good for us, but that's okay. So I have a to-do list for the students. I've just got to get over this. This is housekeeping, right, before we talk about Interstellar. Let's do some housekeeping. Here's your to-do list. Take advantage of all the university has to offer, athletics, classes, and the arts, whatever. Make sure you attend class. All right? It is not the same thing to do it via the internet, right? Look at somebody else's notes, or just think you're going to wing it. Attend class. These 4 years is time that you're never going to be able to get back. And you will learn a lot of things when you attend class. Attend class. Okay. Take classes outside of your major requirements, even if you're not guaranteed to get an A. Now, some people might disagree with me on that, but I can tell you that those things are going to hold you in very good stead in the years to come. A lot of times people say, well, I'm just going to take just what's required for my major and make sure that I get out of here. But you get an opportunity now to experience so many things. Take advantage of it. To do. Meet people who are not in your natural circle, whatever that is. Whether it has to do with athletics, whether it has to do with the discipline you're in, it has to do with what school you went to before you came here, what you want to go into. Meet people and hang out with people who are not within that easy, natural circle. Again, you have all these folks from around the world, from around the country, with different ideas. This is a great time to meet them. And I need you to understand something else, and I want you to take this to heart. Despite what you may think, college is not the hardest thing you will ever do in your life. It's certainly one of the most meaningful and wonderful times if you intend to make it, but it is not the most difficult thing when you ever do in your life. You may not believe me, but can I ask, can I get some amens down here? I just like, it's not the most difficult thing. So take advantage of it and have a little sense of humor. Here's some don'ts. I got a couple of don'ts. Don't assume that you know everything you need to know. Say it again. Don't assume that you know everything you think you need to know. There's no harm in learning something that you don't know you're going to need. You know, you might slip and learn something new. It's okay. And also, don't assume that everything that you know now is going to be true in the years to come. You have to have a little bit of an open mind so that you're able to fit this knowledge into places, right? It doesn't mean that there is a looseness of facts. It doesn't mean that facts and observation and data are fluid. It just means that they're evolving. And so that means that you're going to have to keep learning and understanding. The work of a university is education. That's what we want to do. Faculty and administration must continue to learn and expand their capacity to teach and see beyond what they thought were truisms. So now I'm going to talk to the faculties. I used to teach at Dartmouth in environmental studies, so I'm okay to do this, okay? There are a couple of truisms that are particularly pernicious for me, for faculty members, and it's the idea of weeding students out. That whole idea of weeding students out. Let me provide you with an example. Bayer Corporation, B-A-Y-E-R Corporation, does surveys almost every year on science. and what does it mean in science education? They asked the heads of STEM departments in major research universities about different types of students. These heads of these STEM departments at major research universities said that women students were the best prepared coming into college to graduate with a STEM degree. Yet, the heads of the departments were okay with the fact that women graduated at a lower rate than male students. They were okay with that. So they said, these are the best prepared students, but it's okay that they graduate at lower rates. They also said it was okay when what they considered were very well-prepared minority students who graduated at lower rates. And you know why? They said because, you know, they just couldn't stand up to the pressure. This is how you reconcile it as a professor. You know, the students just couldn't stand up to the pressure. Our job is to weed them out, right? And they just didn't fit in. You know? As educators, as professors, our job is to, as best we can, take the talent that comes to us and help people develop it. That's what our job is, not to weed people out.
Dr. Mae Jemison mentions that the road was not always easy, especially when it seemed as if instructors were determined to ignore her very existence. In a 2000 article from the New York Times entitled Outnumbered, Standing Out at Work, she speaks about her years at Stanford majoring in engineering. She was maybe one of two or three African-American students in her classes. She stated in this article that some professors would just pretend I wasn't there. I would ask a question and a professor would act as if it was just so dumb, the dumbest question he had ever heard. Then when a white guy would ask the same question, the professor would say, "That's a very astute observation." As a medical student, sometimes I needed to hear the criticism in order to become a good doctor. Also as an engineer and as an astronaut. But many times, what's lacking is the praise. Race is always an issue in the United States. You always run into people who aren't comfortable with you. But we all, the way people look, whether or not they're heavy set, for example, influences us. Anyone who says he isn't influenced by race is lying.
We've come a long, long way together through the hard times and the good. I have to celebrate you, baby. I have to praise you like I should. You're so rare, so fine. I'm so glad you're mine. You're so rare, so fine. I'm so glad you're mine. You make me glad I'm a woman, 'cause you're a feeling, thinking man. And anytime what I'm feeling, with why and how I want to live. You're so rare, man, you're so fine. You know, I'm so glad you're mine. You're so very rare and so fine. I'm sure not glad you're mine. I have to praise you when you hold me, when you work your way around. Ain't a part of me left over that your sweet love ain't found. You make my moan turn to whisper. You make my whisper turn to call. You make me scream and and scream that I love you. When you make me rise and fall, you're so rare and you're so fine, and I'm so very, very, very glad you're mine. You're so rare, so fine. Oh, oh, you're mine, you're mine. You know I want the best for you, baby. Mm-hmm. And what you want, I want for you. And we can work together, baby, to see it all come true. 'Cause you're so rare and you're so fine, and Lord knows I'm so very glad you're mine. You're so rare, so rare, and you're so very, very fine. Oh, you cleared all the questions from my mind. Hard times and all the good. I'm gonna take this day to celebrate you, baby. 'Cause I have to stop and praise you like I should. You're so rare, take your praise, and you're so fine. And I hope you know I'm glad you're mine. Take your praise, you're so rare, take your praise, you're so fine.
The youngest of three children, Mae Jemison was born October 17, 1956 in Decatur, Alabama. At the age of three, her family moved to Chicago, Illinois, so that the Jemison children could benefit from better educational opportunities that the North had to offer. Interestingly enough, the name Jemison should also ring a bell concerning the civil rights movement. In 1953, Reverend T.J. Jemison helped lead one of the first civil rights bus boycotts of segregated seating on public buses in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The Organization of Free Rides were coordinated by black churches. This was a model used later by the Montgomery bus boycott in Alabama from 1955 to 1956. Mae Jemison spent much of her free time in her school's library reading about science and astronomy. She credits her parents with being the best scientists she knew because they were always asking questions. She graduated from Morgan Park High School and at 16 earned a scholarship to Stanford University, where she earned her Bachelor's of Science degree in Chemical Engineering and a Bachelor's of Arts in African American Studies. She earned her doctorate in medicine from Cornell University in 1981. It is well worth mentioning that while she was attending Cornell University, she studied in Cuba, Kenya, and worked at a Cambodian refugee camp in Thailand. After graduating, she worked as a general practitioner. She took her skills and talents to the Peace Corps, where she volunteered in Sierra Leone and Liberia. She speaks Russian, Japanese, and Swahili. A pivotal moment in her life was in 1983, after Sally Ride became the first American woman in space. She was preceded by two Russian cosmonauts, Valentina Tereshkova in 1963 and Svetlana Savitskaya in 1982. Being inspired by Sally Ride's achievement, Mae Jemison applied to NASA's astronaut program. The explosion of the Challenger shuttle in 1986 put a hold on applicants. However, in 1987, she along with 14 other people were selected out of more than 2,000 candidates. And after a year of training, she became the first African-American female astronaut.
Mustang Sally. You better slow your Mustang down. Oh, Lord. What I said now, Mustang Sally now, baby. Oh, Lord. Guess you better slow your Mustang down.
On September 12, 1992, Mae Jemison touched the stars aboard Endeavour space shuttle with six other crew members. With 126 orbits around the Earth as a mission specialist, she helped research two bone cell experiments, one of 43 on this mission. Jemison voyage clocked 190 hours, 30 minutes, and 23 seconds in space. In March 1993, she left NASA and went to teach at Dartmouth College. She also founded her own company, the Jemison Group, which seeks to encourage a love of science in students and bring advanced technology around the world. She is also a strong advocate for the intersectionality of the arts and sciences being taught together. In 1994, she founded the Earth We Share, an international space camp for students between the ages of 12 and 16. In 2014, Dr. Mae Jemison's the Dorothy Jemison Foundation was selected to lead the 100-Year Starship, a nonprofit organization that can sustain efforts over the next century to enable interstellar travel. Here's an excerpt from her TED Talk, filmed at TED in 2016, where she shares her ideas on what it takes to achieve interstellar travel.
When you think about space exploration, it impacted everybody because this picture, you know, we always are looking now at orbital sunrises, right? Everybody knows that we're on this planet Earth. But the question I have to ask now, what are we today going to do to contribute to those same kinds of radical leaps? Franz Fanon, a Martinican psychiatrist, said, each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. We have to figure out what we're going to do with those radical leaps and how we're going to get there. But I guess first we actually have to talk about what is a radical leap. I think of it as a product, a concept, an idea, goods or services, something that we can change the world, something that actually transforms us from one generation to the next, something we can't go back for. It can be a policy, a decision. Think of the kinds of things that are radical leaps. They cause discontinuities in the way things were. You can't kill them because they're there. We can actually remember them. Germ theory. It's a radical leap, right? The wheel, the light bulb, those are radical leaps, right? If you start to look at things like, how do we get to the hip hop with the Grammys? Because of the Lost Poets and Gil Scott-Heron talking about the revolution will not be televised. These are things that build up on each other. When we look at radical leaps in mathematics, so we can start counting on our toes, right? Then we get to an abacus, then we can get to a computer. These are things that are discontinuities. These are changes that happen, radical leaps. Some people want to have their hair straight permanently. Some people want to have their hair curly permanently. Permanence for a lot of people were radical leap, right? In technology and how do we see the world. So these things can be daily activities. They can be things that happen very frequently. Why do we need them? Because of the overwhelming challenges that we face in the world today can't be solved through incrementalism, through tiny baby steps. When we talk about the issue of climate change, when we talk about the loss of biodiversity, when we talk about needing to feed everyone, when we talk about why we have so much war, when we talk about toxins that are in the environment, when we talk about wanting to include everyone in the bounty of this world, they can't be solved with baby steps and incrementalism. We have to do something much bigger. But let me just do one quick word about radical leaps and incrementalism. Radical leaps aren't always good, right? There can be policies that are put into place. There can be things that we do. There can be weapons that we create that are not always wonderful. They're a radical leap, but they're not always wonderful. It's who's creating the technology that makes a difference. It's who's creating the policy that makes a difference. And incrementalism, we have to be careful because right now we're building our world on a lot of the work that was done in the 50s and the 60s. That's what's moving us forward. And we're making incremental improvements on it. And we pay for incremental improvements. That's how we get profits, right? So our profitability, we want to be able to make sure that it's going to happen, right? We want to be able to predict it, and we benefit from it. So we have to be really careful. Incrementalism is important sometimes, but we need to do it a little differently. The question is, what actually holds us back? Why aren't we doing bigger things? Why don't we do bigger things as governments, as people, as individuals? I think the first answer is people. The perceptions of who has the solution. So many times we want to go to the same people for the solutions over and over again, right? But we have to have different people in the teams. But we're sometimes afraid to have different people in the teams. We're very fearful that someone might get ahead of us, right? So if we open a door, if we go someplace, someone may get ahead of us. And fear is particularly powerful when we think we're going to lose something, right? We have to be able to get beyond that. Fear keeps us from doing stuff. We're afraid that we may fail. But all of those things keep us from taking these risks. And I think one of the biggest ones is also looking back. We look back to the greatest generation, right? We look back to the glory days of Apollo. We have to be able to do more than that. We have to be able to look forward. We learn the lessons from the past. We build up on them, but we don't sit transfixed with them. So how do we generate radical leaps? We do it by, first of all, assembling a team that's transdisciplinary, because none of the problems that we have today can actually be solved by just one discipline. They have to be built up across a number of different disciplines. We also have to make sure that we choose a problem that's difficult enough, one that we don't know how to do very easily, right? And then we have to understand that it's going to require commitment. So the problem also has to be one that people can feel comfortable and connected with. Those are the things we need to do. And so, of course, the work that I'm doing right now in leading 100 Year Starship is really about pursuing an extraordinary tomorrow in order to create a better world today. We believe pursuing the extraordinary is what creates a better world today.
Dear listeners, Dr. Mae Jemison is right in saying that the extraordinary is what creates a better world today. We are looking to make that happen now. If you are interested in making this happen with Democrats Abroad, check out www.democratsabroad.org/BC, as well as voteframabroad.org. Our voices are powerful together as we move forward. Stay tuned for more as we move into our monthly broadcasting schedule. We are still so excited that you have joined us on this journey we call Power to the People, brought to you by Democrats Abroad Global Black Caucus. And until next time, continue sharing your power.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind, then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be